Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Another week of financial education. Tate Duryea here with Ryan Gibson. What's happening, man?
Not much. I couldn't be more excited about unpacking the mysterious world of owning an airplane, getting tax breaks, putting it into a flight school, how to shield your income. And high income earners are always looking to ways to shield income and also be in general aviation because, being an airline pilot for 17 years, I love flying, but you kind of lose touch with general aviation and you want to go back into it. And then you realize you can buy a plane and have fun with it. But there's also ways to buy a plane, have fun with it, have it pay for itself.
Yeah.
Have it be a tax break for you. And really, we are going to reveal a strategy in this show on how to do it with effective no money out of pocket.
Yeah. Again, we talk a lot about taxes on this show. We're not giving tax, legal, or investment advice. Link up with a good CPA, talk to them about these strategies before you try and implement them. But there's some really, really powerful depreciation benefits here. It's making me excited because I love general aviation. I said this on the show, but I just put 11 and a half hours on the Bonanza. We flew it from Reno all the way up through Idaho, southern Idaho, and into Coeur d'Alene, and then all the way back down. It's so much fun. And for me, the dream of owning my own airplane, because I'm just on the insurance for a friend that owns this Bonanza, the dream of actually owning my own plane has been really far away. And this episode kind of outlines like, maybe it's not that far away. You know, there are ways that you can leverage leaseback pools, depreciation benefits to rent the airplane back to yourself. And it could be a lot closer than you think.
And we're going to talk about how you can sort of actively participate in it, but also make it kind of pretty passive.
Yep.
And have a team behind you to support you in the aircraft parking, the leaseback, the maintenance, probably help you with a ton of referrals on insurance. Where do you even go to buy one? Like, who do you even call to buy one? We're going to bring on that person to the show, and he's going to walk you through exactly how this all works.
Yeah. And of course, it's not it's not a great investment, right? In the long term, it's a depreciating asset. The nice thing about real estate is you get to write it off, but it increases in value over time. This is something that decreases in value over time, right? But if you want an airplane, you might as well get a great tax benefit out of it. And yeah, we're going to show you a way that you can essentially have the government subsidize your down payment for the airplane, the entire thing. So without further ado, let's get into it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Hey, Luke, really nice to see you and welcome to the show.
Hey, Ryan, good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so you and I met through the Flight Academy, the place that I actually rent the Cirrus SR-22T in Seattle, in the Seattle area. So Renton has a flight school called the Flight Academy. You know, I actually love flying the Cirrus. It's a great plane to get around. And I actually first got into Cirrus flying when I went to Atlanta. And actually, Tate and I, we rented a 172 SP and we flew around the Southeast, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, to do due diligence on a self-storage portfolio.
That was a blast.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then after a while, we're like, man, the ground speed just isn't doing it for us. But most importantly, we like the icing protection that we have, flight in known icing conditions. And then we also like the fact that you can kind of get above and climb a little higher and use oxygen and things like that. Well, anyway, I went through the Cirrus certification program. And then when I came back to Seattle, I was like, hey, where can I rent a Cirrus? And so that's how we got connected. And I think what you do is fascinating with renting planes and selling planes and doing pre-sale or pre-owned sales of the Vision Jet and Cirrus. So anyway, Luke, give us a little bit of your background.
Yeah, well, I love to hear your story that you're using GA in the way it should be for your business. We were talking a little bit before the show about the personal trips and that's why we get into aviation to do those things. My background, I'm born and raised Seattle guy, not sure what I wanted to do professionally. My uncle was a pilot for UPS, had a good living, lived on a lake, got a bunch of ski days in. So as I was kind of floundering around in college, I said, I'll be a pilot. And I went to the local airport and soloed. And I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. So I went to flight school and I got my certificates, but I had to get a four-year degree at that time. So I went back to the University of Washington. While I was doing that, I was instructing at Boeing Field, and they just happened to have 5 Cirruses on leaseback, which I think we're going to talk about, at a time when there was only 300 Cirruses that existed. So I got a really big head start on the Cirrus world and From there, I got hired and went to Duluth, Minnesota. This has to be some reason to go there. And it was for Cirrus Aircraft. And I had this amazing job. People would buy brand new airplanes. They were small business owners. They were, you know, executives at companies. And I would deliver the plane from Duluth to, you know, Santa Monica, California, to Jacksonville, Florida, to York, Pennsylvania, all over the country. And I went from 800 hours to 2,000 hours in a year. It was a great job. And then, you know, life happened. I met a girl back home, sort of thing. Well, I knew it for a long time, actually. But anyways, we got married and moved back to Seattle. We started doing it there and building our business. And that turned into aircraft rentals and flight training and doing adventure trips. And then that turned into selling airplanes and kind of staying in the Cirrus ecosystem and just trying to provide services to really, you know, people that could own airplanes. And just had a great time doing it ever since.
So I think what's really cool is that I grew up in the traditional Part 61 flight school where, you know, 172s, 152s, you know, a lot of airplanes, a lot of volume of students just kind of like passing through. And you're just, you know, you look at the schedule and you're doing, you know, 6, 7, 8 lessons a day. And you do a little bit of ground school, a little bit of flying. And so if you're thinking about like an instructing career, this is, I think the Cirrus lifestyle, or they call it the Cirrus life, is kind of fun because, you know, you're, you know, talking to your instructors, you know, they, when I was getting checked out, you know, they're like, yeah, well, we do it a little bit different. You know, we will actually fly the airplane to your location. So like they'll go, you know, fly the airplane from Renton down to Bend, you know, for a few days and actually train somebody on site that's taking delivery of like a Cirrus or SR-22. So they kind of fly like all over the country to really cool places and meet with people to train them up. And I think that's a really, A, that's kind of fun for the instructor to build their hours that way. Way more fun than I think, you know, some of the things that we did, which is like, how many times can you go around the Flint VOR? And, you know, they get to go to different places. They kind of get that better cross-country experience and they're flying a great airplane.
Real quick on that, yesterday, we had a gentleman, we met him at the factory, he picked up his brand new G7 SR-22T, didn't have any flying experience, and we flew back across the country 3 days, you know, have really get to kind of eat your dessert before, go over the Rockies, fly by Mount Rushmore, and go out and, well, the crew car concept, all that kind of stuff, and then he landed in Renton, and now we're going to start on his private pilot's licenses, and he's going to come be with us for a week at a time, 5 days, go away for 7, back for 5. And we're going to fly with them. You know, we'll get 4 flight hours a day and 2 lessons. Anyways, we're going to do that to get his private. And then to your other point, we have a couple down in College Station, Texas. We're going to fly the airplane from Renton, park it in College Station, Texas for about 2 months. The instructor will go back and forth several times and we'll get their both of their privates done in that capacity.
That's amazing. And we're going to unpack like all the things behind the curtain on this podcast, which I think is going to be really fun because I have a crap load of questions, but Tate, you're dying to get into.
Yeah. So Luke and I were talking before the show, and I just want to preface this episode with, you know, the idea here is, hey, let's talk about GA. And let's, you know, we've been witnessing incredible run-ups in the wealth and the incomes of airline pilots. And there's so many airline pilots that haven't touched GA in 10, 20 years. And Ryan and I both get to play in the space. It's amazing. I just put 11 and a half hours on the Bonanza a few weeks ago. We went all the way up through Sun Valley, Idaho, and up to Coeur d'Alene for a wedding, and then put it back to bed in the Bay Area. And it's just so fun flying into these small airports. You forget how easy it is. You walk in, you sign your name, they take a photocopy of your driver's license. That's your rental car. It's even easier if it's a crew car. I mean, it's just so much fun. If you don't remember the joy of general aviation, we're here to remind you of it and to talk a little bit about the business aspects, the passive income potential, and the tax depreciation potential of aircraft ownership. So that's what you're in store for today.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I guess let's go one by one. So the planes that are at your flight school in Renton, my understanding is that, Luke, you don't own them, or maybe you do, but who owns those airplanes and who's benefiting from this flight school?
Yeah. We do own some of them, but we have a leaseback program or a marketing arrangement, you know, because that's what's required to meet the rules of the taxes. But one of our customers, for example, is a surgeon in Seattle, a private pilot, and he certainly flies his plane. I'm not sure the hours, man. Let's call it 50, 70 hours a year. And the plane is on leaseback with us, and we then have it for rent and for flight training. We're a little bit different program in that all of our aircraft are Cirrus, And they really are all late model. You know, our business model is to have 2 years under 1,000-hour aircraft. So we're really providing a high-end product for people that can afford to rent that and want that. And maybe it's a gateway into ownership, or maybe they just rent and keep enjoying that style and, you know, put off some of the challenges that ownership has. But that is a renter. You know, we have another gentleman who's owns several small businesses, and one of the things he does is use the airplane to get back and forth to do, to look at properties, to look at maybe warehouses. And then the rest of the time, we're able to use that plane for a rental fleet or for flight training.
That's great. And so I think that's the mystery we want to solve today, right? We want to talk about, you know, okay, you have these people that are light use on the aircraft, and, you know, I want to unpack the benefits of giving it to the flight academy to rent out to other people, you know. And it sounds like you do the whole thing. You're doing the maintenance on the plane. You've got a home for it on the ramp. You know, what other benefits to that owner do they have?
Yeah, we try to make the experience turnkey. Obviously, they're paying for the aircraft, but we set up, you know, we have a group insurance policy. We take care of the storage of the aircraft. We manage it in terms of getting in it for maintenance, making sure the databases are updated, cleaning, all the things it requires to make the plane useful. And in our particular way, we talked about where we kind of do concentrated flight training, accelerated, if you will, is that someone comes in and they say, hey, I'm going to use the plane for this week and we're going to hit it pretty hard. But then that means it might be available the next week for the owner. So we have an online scheduling tool, and we kind of make sure they understand how we work. Where most flight schools are doing 2-hour blocks of time and they're just doing that forever, that's not our program. We kind of talk to our people about making the spreadsheet work with about 30 to 50 hours of rental a month. And sometimes, you know, we're here in Seattle, the summer that peaks up and in the winter it slows down. But they're really turnkey. They just get to buy the airplane and then we take care of all the stuff. It's there for them when they want to fly it.
And do they make any profit on that rental?
You know, that's a good question. The planes do cash flow for the owners, but there's some other costs, if we're being clear, about depreciation, where it's not necessarily a great ROI on your money. So when you buy the plane, it will, you know, cover the mortgage, it will cover the maintenance, it will cover the insurance. But then when we add in depreciation, you're at a little bit of a loss. So it really is for someone that's looking for the tax side of it, plays a huge role into wanting to do this.
Let's talk about that.
And just to clarify real quick before we go too far, because depreciation is a kind of a new concept, I think, for a lot of our listeners. You might actually be on paper cash in pocket is what you're saying. But on your tax return, you may be showing a loss. Or are you actually talking about the physical depreciation of the airplane?
Well, there's both kinds and both are real. So certainly, let's just talk about the first part. You know, you've got your monthly bills that come with the airplane and you get your cash flow. And I think at the end of the year, that's probably about a net zero. So that kind of covers everything. But aircraft typically are a depreciating asset. So that means as we put hours on it, as you put hours on it, it has less value when we sell it to the next person. That doesn't come off every year. You know, you don't see that until you actually go to sell the aircraft. So there's real asset depreciation and its value. And then there's the part where it becomes the investment side is the bonus depreciation. We've had some nice laws and we have had for a lot of years, and they've kind of changed, and is Congress going to reauthorize them? But both under Democratic and Republican presidents, they've existed. And as we sit here in 2024, and as an aircraft salesman, my phone's getting busy on the pre-owned side, there's 60% depreciation in the first year on owning an aircraft. And that's something that's driving a lot of buyers. We always see busy Decembers because of that.
Yeah, we see the same thing in real estate. People, hey, what do you got? You got something to buy? Do you got something to invest in before the end of the year? Because they can look backwards on the tax year and say, I've had all these gains. What do I do about that? And sometimes buying an airplane or buying real estate in the final month of the year will give you that tax shield against what you've made throughout the year. And so as a strategy, as an investor, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, hey, I've sold a bunch of rental properties this year and I didn't do a 1031 exchange, which we talk about on a different show. What do I do? Well, the answer could be to invest in something, right? And you know, in this case, we're talking to Luke about buying airplanes, but buying airplanes or buying real estate will give you that taxable shield against any potential gains that you have. You mentioned 60%. I just wanted to clarify the 60%, and maybe we unpack that. So let's just say it's $1 million airplane that you buy. What do you think in this tax year, if you sold a pre-owned, you know, I don't even know if you get a pre-owned less than 2-year old Cirrus for that much money, but let's say you're getting a million dollar airplane, how much tax break would somebody expect to get dollars wise?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of nuance in there about what comes through on your taxes, W-2 versus, you know, K-1 and those sort of things. But the 60% tax benefit, so you get to write off $600,000 of your income in that case. And so, you know, you profited, you've got a profit of $600,000. Now it's zero. So now your tax basis is zero.
And next year, that's going to drop to $400,000, right? 40%.
That's right. But it's the bonus depreciation part. It was a not too distant past where you could do 100% bonus depreciation. That was even a tastier thing. And then it went to 80, not 60. And now this is something gets volleyed around back and forth in Congress and has had different things, but it's certainly been advantageous to aircraft owners.
Now, you get the $600,000 write-off this year, but you also get the $400,000 to depreciate over a certain span of life, right? So the $600,000 you get in the first year, because that's bonus depreciation, but you still get the benefit of the $400,000 that you didn't depreciate in the first year, right? It just happens slower.
That's right. I mean, you can fully depreciate the asset over 5 years. The traditional depreciation is 20% a year. So you just get to accelerate that in the first year, and then you work the rest out over time. Something to clarify is you do have to have the plane linked to a business. It can't just be your private aircraft. So that's where the flight school and the lease back comes in as helping to facilitate that bonus depreciation. You know, if your business is such that you need to travel and you can say the aircraft is required for the travel, then that's helpful. And even learning to fly the aircraft is an act that can be written off and put towards those hours. But you know, if you don't have a business that requires an airplane, then you have to find a way to do that. And putting it in the flight school is that way.
No, that's a really good point. We talked about this before. I think, you know, it's like, okay, well, you basically said at the beginning of the show, we're going to break even here. What's the advantage? Well, the advantage is Luke and his team are going to take care of your plane, and you're going to have a place to put it, and you're going to have the maintenance done, and you might net zero at the end of the year. Maybe you have a banner year and it flies a lot, and you make a little bit of cash flow. But your big benefit is that you've put it into operation, you put it into service so that you can take that tax break that Luke was talking about.
In terms of linking it to a business, you know, you have to have a certain amount of usage has to be business versus personal. And so if you put the plane in at the end of the year and only do one flight, that counts for the whole calendar year of 2024. You could say 100% of my business use in 2024, 100% of the aircraft use in 2024 was for business. If on December 30th or 31st, you did that one business flight, and then that would count against any income for the whole year.
Right. And this is exactly like when you buy a short-term rental. You know, you scramble to get it ready and listed, and you get your first short-term rental tenant in there on December 30th, and you get you can do the cost segregation bonus depreciation for the entire calendar year.
Now, as a reminder, we're not giving any tax, legal, or investment advice. Do your own due diligence and consult with your tax and legal team before doing any of these strategies. This is just a friendly conversation. Luke does this, Tate and I do this personally. I don't own an airplane, but you know, just know that these strategies are out there. And so, you know, I mean, think about this. This is, you buy an airplane for $1 million, you get the $600K write off, put it in service for a very, very short period of time, and then you pull it out, you still benefit from that write off. You're not going to have to earn it back in. And then, you know, you can decide if you want to keep it in rental service or not. You know, this is a massive strategy that people do. And, you know, Tate, I've even talked to a CPA that told me that you don't even have to give it ready for rental service necessarily. You just have to have it offered out to the public. You don't even need a tenant in it.
Yeah, that's the feedback we've gotten from CPA teams is it, you know, the definition, the IRS definition of placed in service is that it's being advertised and it's available. You wouldn't even need a tenant in that short-term rental.
So Luke, what do people typically do in your flight school? They typically buy a brand new Cirrus, enter it into service, rent it out for a couple of years. What's the typical, you know, avatar of someone that buys a plane and gives it to the flight academy to rent?
Yeah, I mean, that's our model. So we are a little different. We're a boutique flight school, and we do kind of deal with people that have the means and the interest in flying a Cirrus. So our model is brand new aircraft, and we have them for about two years, less than 1,000 hours, and we want to turn them over because we just want to have the latest and greatest. Cirrus just changed their airplane. They now have a Generation 7. So we're in the process of changing our fleet from generation 6 to generation 7. So our clients, you know, Cirrus has done a great job of bringing in non-pilots, non-aviators into this. So 40% of new aircraft buyers for Cirrus are not pilots previously. And so not only do they need to learn how to fly, but they need to learn how to own and operate and manage the aircraft. It's, you know, it's not something that people have a lot of experience with. So our buyers are successful individuals in other walks of life, you know, entrepreneurs, executives, businesses. Around here, we have a lot of Amazon clients, Microsoft clients, but we also have a lot of small business owners doing, you know, I'm always amazed at what people are doing there, from storage units to CBD oil to traditional stockbrokers and doctors to butchers. I mean, we just have all kinds of people. And so they say, hey, I know how to do that. I like flying. I'll buy the airplane, put the plane in your flight school. You guys manage it. You guys fly. You send me a check at the end of every month. And then that's how it's going to happen.
I love it. Why Cirrus, do you think? What's so popular about this plane?
Well, I couldn't be more biased. I mean, I have about 12,000 hours flying Cirrus. So that's like, if you cut me open, it bleeds out. But I think the safety features appeal very much. Every airplane has a parachute on it. We've got big modern displays so that the screens are easy to read and easy to operate. The interior is based on a BMW. But it just kind of feels right. You go out to the airplane, it's nice, it's clean. You can take your family and friends. You know, the flight school I first went at had the 172s with the stop drilled cracks, and you had to explain to people why that worked or different things. So it's a modern aircraft, the safe airplane, and it actually can get you places. From here, you want to go to Sun Valley, 2 hours and 15 minutes, boom, you're in Sun Valley. You want to go to San Francisco, 3 hours. So,
yeah, I can... You know, it's funny when, you know, I'm thinking about this, and the parachute thing is a funny thing for airline pilots, right? Because, you know, as an airline pilot, you're like, this thing's like taking up space. It's a gimmick. It's like, I don't need a freaking parachute, right? But I'll say, we're flying the Bonanza around, and my wife Lucy is going, hey, what happens if you pass out? Like, how do I land this thing? And I'm like, all right, so you got your prop knob here. You got mixture. You've got the flaps here. You got to put the gear down. You got to do this. You got to do that. You got to do that. And she's like, dude, there's no way. And I'm like, actually, yeah, you're right. There's no way. Yeah. There's no way, because too fast, heavy, complicated of an airplane for her to land with no flight experience. So even if you are a very experienced pilot, it actually is comforting for your passengers to know they can just pull a big red handle.
I mean, we've come a long way in the 20 plus years that Cirrus has been producing airplanes, and we've got 129 parachute pulls, 265 saves. And, you know, when airplane crashes are usually pretty messy affairs, and these things are, let me give you a Tylenol and a Band-Aid. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. My wife had the same thing. We were flying from here to Sun River, Oregon, and we were going over about Rainier National Park area, and, you know, we're in a 182, and she's looking down. So what if we lose an engine here? And I was like, probably get tangled up in the trees and hurt pretty good. So she loves the Cirrus, and it's a great plane for that. Can we break down, let's just say, you know, I'm not going to get into numbers and what the hourly rates are and things like that, but if the plane was $100 to rent, which is a lot more than that, but if it was $100 an hour to rent, how much, or maybe as a percentage, you know, if I bought a Cirrus and I put it in your fleet, what's the breakdown in cost? And, you know, if someone came in and rented it for an hour, what's going where and what's paying for what?
Yeah. So let's assume that the fuel and any consumables, because we do a consumables rate. So if it's just the $100 is the income for the airplane, what we do is we have a 70-30 split with the owner and the flight school. And so the owner of the aircraft covers obviously the mortgage of the airplane. They cover the insurance. They cover the tie down. They have the costs are borne by the owner. And then we manage the plane and we market the plane. We get it out and bring in the clients in for our percentage.
Got it. So just to be clear, so they're renting the spot and then they're paying the mortgage. They're paying the, what was the other thing you said? The maintenance?
Insurance.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's really simple. We go through, but all of the expenses of the aircraft are the owner's cost. But we handle everything for them so they don't have to do anything. So we schedule all the maintenance, the cleaning. We provide the tie-down space. There is a fee for the tie-down space, but they're pretty hands-off in how anything. Now, they actually can be as hands-on as they want to be in this example, but typically we take care of everything for them.
And what is that expense amount, you think, as a percentage? How much do you think, if the rental rate was $100, is it 60 or 70? I guess the mortgage, and we'll put the mortgage aside because that could be a rate and how much you put down and all this stuff. Let's just talk about maybe maintenance, the tie down. And we're not talking about someone slamming the prop into the ground or some crazy, you know, situation where you got to rinse clay.
Well, I mean, I go back to the top, but really at the end of the year, there really isn't a lot of cash flow on it because those expenses and insurance is probably the largest one. And where we are in the Pacific Northwest, real estate for airplanes is pretty hard to come by. So that's a big expense also. So it kind of washes out. There's not a lot left over for the, you know, the ROI. And as I was kind of saying to people, if this was such a great cash flow business, you'd probably see Cirruses all over the place. But where you have to be able to do is find that tax benefit, that bonus depreciation, where it really comes in. The other thing to think about, I guess, is if you want to make flying pretty much zero cost for you, you can do this investment. And then you are getting your 1,500 hours a year kind of covered by the rental of the aircraft.
Oh, really? So you would probably, that's kind of how you pencil it, right? So if I'm going to fly a Cirrus for 50 hours a year and I buy one, I'm basically just going to cover my costs. And that's pretty significant. I mean, these rates are 500 for the non-turbo SR20 to $800 an hour, maybe. So, I mean, that's not an it's 40, 50 grand. So it's, you know, not insignificant.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you have to keep in mind that the planes that we have on rental, the SR22T, the G7 is a $1.25 million airplane. The SR20 G7 is a $750,000 airplane. So they're, you know, those are getting up there.
So what I love about this is we're all about unlocking ideas on this show and getting people to think different ways. So what the traditional way of thinking about aircraft ownership is, okay, a Cirrus costs $1.25 million. I need to be able to afford a $1.2 million airplane before I can afford to buy it, right? But what we're saying here is, hey, this is a different way of thinking about it. Maybe, you know, you don't need to be in that sort of financial position. You don't need to be that far up the wealth ladder to do this. You could buy it. You can put it into a lease pool. You can take these incredible tax benefits, and you get to have your cake and eat it too, right? So figuring out these creative ways to leverage tax benefits and to leverage the joy of GA without having to just buy it outright by yourself.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to clarify too, that $600,000 deduction you talked about, if I'm an airline pilot, can I deduct that against my W-2? How does that work? Do you know, Luke?
Well, you certainly can deduct it off your bottom line income for sure, but the plane has to be in the furtherance of a business. So that's why it has to be linked to the flight school, because on your own, you can't write it off against your W-2 income.
Exactly.
But
I mean, some pilots are in the 37% tax bracket, right? So now, I mean, $600,000 write-off, I mean, that's huge. That's a lot of money, right? And you get the benefit of flying it because we all love doing that, and you get to go on fun trips. And
well, and to be clear, though, it does not sound like you can write it off against your W-2, right? Because you would have to materially participate in the lease pool in that business. So if you owned a business on the side and you bought the aircraft for the furtherance of that business that you materially participated in, then it would be an active write-off. That's the way I understand it. Is that the way you understand it, Luke?
Yeah. And so our leaseback agreements are actually called marketing agreements. And we've structured them such that I know the name of the podcast is Passive Income Pods, but we've structured them as such that the person who is the lessor of the aircraft participates in that. So we have them involved in a monthly meeting. They come down and are setting, helping us set the rates, and they're involved in the business. Yeah. So it's really not a lease agreement. It's a marketing agreement. And we have them connected to that so that they can participate.
That is fantastic.
This is great.
That's fantastic. So get your CPA involved, obviously. Don't go into this blindly.
Right. Yeah. The thing that I wanted to talk about too is like, okay, so you're getting this $600,000 tax break, but you know, math in public here is not my strong suit, but you know, 37%, let's just say, times 600,000. I mean, you're talking about a $200,000 tax write-off. Let's talk about the financing on this. Where do people typically go get financing? What does that look like? How much down payment?
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly straightforward. Obviously, rates are dynamic and have been high recently and are coming down, but usually 20% down. Right now, the rates are about 2% over the Fed funds rate. So you're in that mid-sevens on those rates, or the mid-sevens on those rates. And, you know, it's a 20-year term, but it's a five-year loan. So you got 5 years, and then you got to do a balloon payment. You have to refinance or do something else. But that's it. We have special banks that specialize in doing aircraft financing, or you can go to your private bank, and they'll do that as well. But they're not as experienced with airplanes, so it can get a little messy.
Have you seen groups of people come in? Like, what if Ryan and I wanted to say, hey, let's go 50-50, because neither of us want to buy the whole thing. And would we both be able to get the tax write-off? Or if three people or four people want to go in on something like this?
Yeah, that's a great question. We definitely do have, shouldn't say the flight account, but people do buy these aircraft in partnerships and spread the tax benefit around. You know, I will admit that how that actually works is a little bit above my pay grade, Dave.
That's fine. No, we just wanted to see if you had, if there were people doing it.
One big benefit, I'm excited. I'm like ready to buy a plane. Let's do this, Luke.
Talk to you after this show, Ryan. Here we go.
And by the way, that's the guy you talk to. You talk to Luke, and he's got the connection. So, I mean, $1 million airplane, I have to put down $200,000. You said 20% down. I'm getting a $222,000 tax deduction at the same time. So you're effectively giving me a tax break in the amount of my down payment, and then I'm break even, and then I get to fly the thing 40, 50 hours a year. And one more benefit to that, I think, is, typically, when you rent these planes, every flight school has an overnight minimum, right? Every flight school is going to say, you got to put 2 hours on the plane to overnight it, yada, 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 $800 an hour for this plane. I mean, you're not going on that's going to add up pretty quick just in the downtime of the airplane, the minimum overnight. So would it be my understanding, if I own the airplane and I wanted to take it for a week and I put an hour on it, I probably wouldn't have to pay the overnight minimum to myself, right? Is that true, or how would you structure that?
We are a small business, so we're willing to work with people on things. But how it works is the plane is owned in a single purpose LLC. So if you own the airplane, Ryan, you don't actually own the airplane. Ryan's Aircraft Ownership LLC owns the airplane. And so then they lease it to the Flight Academy, and then the Flight Academy rents it to you, Ryan. So you would pay us the income, and then we would pay your LLC out of that.
Right.
Now, would we relax the rules for the owner of the aircraft? Of course we would.
Yeah.
But that's something that's not, that's not a federal law or any FAA tax thing or IRS tax thing. So if you want to take your own airplane and you're one of our customers that has a lease back with us, take it whenever you want.
Yeah, it just provides a little bit more flexibility.
I do remember that we were talking to, I think, Toby Mathis about how to put an aircraft in a lease back pool and take the depreciation. One of the key things that he pointed out was that you have to lease it from yourself, essentially, at market rate. That would make sense that you would actually have to, you got to rent it. But of course, the terms might be flexible.
You got to rent it at the price that we have out there for the public, and you're going to rent that. But we could let you take it overnight on 1 hour instead of 2 hours or something. I think, where the conversation should go, and I don't know if I'm interjecting too early, is that this bonus depreciation is great, and it's something that sells a lot of airplanes, and a lot of people take advantage of it. But at some point, when you sell the airplane, you get recapture. And so the recapture is sort of the medicine that is the stiff medicine. So what a lot of people do is they just keep buying a more expensive airplane and rolling over their recapture. And if you do it in the same tax year, you sell, you recapture, you buy again, then now you continue the process. And that can go on, as long as you want to keep playing it. But at some point, you will still have to, pay that tax.
And what's great is, that benefits the renters. I noticed the Flight Academy I joined, I think, a couple of years ago to start running the Cirrus is there. And it's like, I showed up, these planes are brand new. And then all of a sudden, this year, I've noticed the planes are becoming more brand new, right? Because you're getting G7s, right? So this is good for the flight school. It's good for everybody because now planes are brand new. They're getting turned over. People are getting the tax break. This is what the government does in the tax code. They are trying to incentivize you and they're trying to incentivize your behavior to stimulate the economy, right? So, you know, tax code, you know, we talk about this on the show all the time, like the tax code isn't written on how to pay taxes. The tax code is written on how to take tax breaks, right? The government writes incentive to promote activity, right? So I know people are always like, oh, is this going to make me get audited and all this other stuff? And it's like, these things are structured to benefit people who are investing in planes, investing in economy, investing in manufacturing, right? This is the incentive. So it makes sense. Like, wow, is it probably pretty good for the economy that somebody buys a new airplane every year or every other year? So that's why these tax breaks go. But one thing I also wanted to clarify is if you sold a brand new airplane or bought a brand new airplane, you get the depreciation. But if you also bought an old airplane, you would still get the depreciation based on the dollars that you paid for it. Is that your understanding?
That is 100% correct. Yeah. It works for both new and pre-owned aircraft.
And that's a function of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017, which in this form of bonus depreciation, which was 100% for 5 years and now is sunsetting by 20% per year, currently at 60%, 40% next year, it applied to pre-owned assets, which was not a characteristic of bonus depreciation in current form, in previous forms, right? The amazing thing is you could buy a used airplane, you could still take bonus depreciation, didn't have to be a brand new asset. So
that's a great point, Tate. Yeah, that was a change and it spurred a lot of activity.
Sure did.
Yeah, so just to make sure that people are following along with this. So if you bought $1 million plane, you're going to get a $600,000 write-off in the year that we're filming this in 2024. Then you're going to have $400,000 left over to deduct and you're going to get $100,000 a year because you've already gone through 1 year and then you get the additional $100,000 per year in the 4 years that remain in the depreciation. So yes, you get a huge tax break in year one, but then you also get a $100,000 tax break in years 2, 3, 4, and 5, right? Is that how we
spot on.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, you're getting that $220,000 break in the first year, but in the second year, if you're in the 37% tax bracket, you're getting $37K savings on taxes while you break even on the plane, assuming, right? And you get to go fly it. Now, the recapture tax, I on my understanding, you know, everybody kind of gets afraid of recapture, but recapture is typically done at a flat 25%. Isn't that your guys' understanding?
I think it's actually done at your tax rate, but
is it? Okay.
It's only what, you know, if you fly the airplane, let's say you bought that plane at $1 million and it was actually worth $700,000 when you sold it, you depreciate 100%. So that $700,000 is now all profit or all to the bottom line, but you're only paying tax on that amount, not the original amount that you purchased.
I see. Gotcha. So it could be slightly advantageous depending on, you know, where you're buying to sell.
But there's got to be an end of the cycle. But what happens is someone takes that $700,000 and then they go buy the $1.2 million airplane and now they can write off the $700,000 plus and keep going.
That's exactly what I talk about in real estate, being a lazy man's 1031. It's like, as long as you're taking those proceeds and you're rolling them back into real estate or other assets that provide fresh depreciation benefits, it's like you can offset those gains in perpetuity, as long as you're continually investing those proceeds back in, which is the idea. That's what the IRS designed it for.
Let's switch gears to the purchase of the plane. What's the wait list like? Where do you find these things? What's it like working with you, Luke? How long does it take? You know, kind of go over kind of a overview of that.
Yeah, thank you. New aircraft are produced by Cirrus, or the ones that I deal in, Cirrus Aircraft, and they have a 2-year-ish backlog. I mean, that kind of ebbs and flows a little bit, but they're doing a great job on their marketing and on the new sales. So that's about a 2-year backlog to get those aircraft. Pre-owned airplane are, you know, readily available on the market. There's kind of the biggest place where everyone puts them on controller.com. I broker planes with Arista. We have Arista.com. And what it goes like is typically someone calls me up and they tell me what they're always start with. What's your mission? What do you want to do with the airplane? Do you have to go somewhere? Because that's going to tell us if you need a turbo, do you need a 22, a 22T, a 20. What are you doing with the airplane? So let's find a plane that actually fits what you want. And then we talk about the features. Do you need anti-icing or, you know, air conditioning? Do you want oxygen? What is it that you want? Where's your price range? Are we going to buy an almost new one-year-old plane? Are we going to go look back 10 years and find one with a little more hours on it? Anyway, so we understand what the person wants, what their price range is, and then we go find them an aircraft that meets their needs. The process can take several months, or if someone's on it, we can do it probably in 3 weeks. And so we locate the aircraft, we look at the log books, we negotiate a price, we get it in for an inspection, we deal with getting the plane, you know, get them set up with insurance, get them set up with financing. And then obviously that goes through an escrow process, just like a home. And you close the airplane, switch the ownership. And once again, another thing on the taxes is part of it is, where do you close the aircraft? You're going to close it in Oregon, Montana. You're going to get it out of California. Most people do that kind of stuff. So there's some skill to doing it.
What state's the best state?
Well, that's, it depends on a lot of factors. So for example, Oregon is a no sales tax state. So people in our part of the world say, oh, let's close in Oregon. Well, if you live in Washington, we have a use tax, which is the equivalent of sales tax. So there's really no getting around it. There are some tax states. We're closing an airplane in South Carolina. I believe they have a $2,500 use tax. There's things like a casual sale where you can avoid it altogether. So it really depends on where will the plane be based and where's your principal ownership. Some people have houses in two states, and where do they say they live? So it gets complicated. And back to your disclaimer, I would recommend hiring a tax professional.
Right.
And there are guys that specialize in aircraft taxes.
What is the biggest mistake or most common misconception that people have when they're buying their first airplane?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I think people don't appreciate what their mission is. So they'll not realize how much they can fit it into their lifestyle, actually, or how much they're going to like it. So a lot of times, not uncommon for someone to buy an SR-20, which is the smaller engine airplane, and they jump in it and they doing a few things, and then they realize they want to be able to go over the mountains in the wintertime. They want to take two other, you know, another couple with them somewhere. And so they buy too small. They don't buy big enough. And then I think probably realizing, for most of the people that we deal with, that there is some workload to owning an aircraft and managing it and making sure it's maintained properly and updated and so forth. And so not getting the support help after the purchase.
Makes a lot of sense.
Well, that's great. You know, this has been, you know, eye-opening for me, and I think our listeners are going to love this one. Luke, you know, thank you for your time. Can you tell us, how do people get in touch with you? You know, what's the next step? What website? What's your email address? What's the best way to do it?
Yeah, awesome. I appreciate you giving the opportunity. I wear a couple hats. I own the Flight Academy. We're a flight training organization where you rent your airplane from, and we do these leaseback deals. And so we're at Renton Field, but we travel the country, and that's theflightacademy.com. I'm Luke at the Flight Academy. Then I put on my aircraft sales hat, and I work with Arista. They're a sales organization that specializes in Cirrus aircraft. We do sell others. And so if you're interested in the pre-owned brokerage side, that's arista.com, A-E-R-I-S-T-A.com. And I'm Luke at Arista. But I'm sure there'll be something in the show notes, and I'd love to talk to anybody about this. And this is what I do. I spend my time talking airplanes, and you know, when I'm not talking to them, I'm meeting you up in the San Juan Islands on the ramp, flying around. So I'm pretty passionate about it.
Yeah, it was funny. Luke and I, I was flying up to a real estate conference up in Anacortes, and the weather went down to minimums, and it's on a rent, well, pretty close to minimums. And that's a little shout out for a Cirrus. I mean, I have 10,000 plus hours, you know, flying the airlines, but man, it's the only single engine that I would take down to minimums. And, you know, any day of the week, I mean, the technology, I mean, based on my experience, again, I'm not giving advice to anybody out there, but you know, the technology on the plane and the instrumentation and the way it's all laid out, it's just a great plane for missions and, you know, and getting the ground speed and the icing protection and the altitude, and they've really just thought of everything, and the safety features with the parachute and everything. It's a great plane to be tooling around in. But Luke and I got caught up in the FBO, and you know, I thought, hey, you'd be a great guest for the show, and we'll unpack all this stuff. So thank you so much for coming on.
Glad to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. On to the next show.
Take care, Luke. Thank you.